This is CliffCentral.com.
It's like a groin injury for Crockett. Play carries on. Smith, the step, straightening. Oh, just unable to get their hands on the ball for long periods in this game. Franks.
Oh, hands were on. You could hear the call from Savea.
Now some room for Carter. Defend. Oh, brilliant ball to Savea! This is magnificent from the All Blacks. And they're in for their third try.
But the brilliance of Carter, the dummy defend, and the reverse flick to Savea. Nobody's catching him. Para and Spedding give up. Beautiful show and go. Pape, no chance. Offloaded. One arm, reverse flick off his weak arm. And Savea, thankful, he doesn't even need to beat anyone. He's coasting
it. He doesn't need to beat anyone, but that's what the All Blacks did. They beat those French, like, well, like kind of a ready-to-step trial, to really take an old-used cliche. Welcome to this week's edition of Rugby Central. There is just so much to chat about. Wow, this really should be a two-hour show this week. Where to begin? Well, obviously the Northern Hemisphere teams are all gone, so there is huge tears for them. And of course, very insightful comments coming out from the press over there. If one thing the British press can do is they can really hate on their own, and they do it in the most cutting and most clinical of ways. England, of course, well, they didn't fail on the weekend. They failed before we even got to this stage. But when it comes to the French, the Welsh, and the Scottish, who else were there? The French, the Welsh, the Scottish, I just forgot about these guys completely. And of course, the Irish. They're all done. They're out. So we're going to get into what is wrong with Northern Hemisphere rugby this week. We're going to chat about, obviously, the results, the quarterfinals we just had. We're going to chat to Sean Wilson, who is probably my favorite rugby person, also because he's hugely reliable. And I really do like Sean's comments, and he adds great value in that he's going to now break out what the Springbok game was all about. We're obviously riding the wave that the Boks are in the semi-final, and there's something to cherish, especially, as everyone's been saying, after losing to Japan. Now, I like to live in the now. I also like to live in going forward. So the Japan result means nothing to me anymore, really. It's all gone. It's all in the past. We've all learned from that, and we moved on. So to reference that thing too much, as far as to give us perspective right now, I think it's a crock of shite. So let's look at the game from the weekend and look at the Boks going forward. And Sean he's just the best guy for it. We're then going to talk about something that's been very interesting throughout the World Cup so far. It's been the predictions. Now, there is an interesting company. I'm not going to give too much away in the intro, but they've created what has been a brilliant machine as far as predicting the results of the matches. Now, we all have played Super Brew in the past, and we all have our own little friendly office wages and things like that, but the guys from Principa D, they've been doing amazing things in that they've been getting the margins so close and have become like a prediction authority just from this World Cup alone. So we're going to be chatting to Johan, who is one of the geniuses from this. We can chat to him in the last sort of 20 minutes and just see how the predictions are made and what we're looking at from the quarterfinals, why they chose certain things, and how they bring in a human element. I did challenge the machine on Friday. My results, I came out 4 out of 4 because I thought that the Irish were going to falter. Of course, mathematically speaking, they were still the favorites. So I won this round of Man vs. Machine. But of course, they beat me 2-3 times before that. So we're going to chat to Johan. So to give you an idea of how predictions come out in rugby. So that's pretty much the kind of crux of the whole show today. If you have any interest in getting in touch with us, you're most welcome to. Just on Twitter, the easiest thing for me is tweet me at followthebounce. If you, of course, listen to this on podcast, you're welcome to tweet me anyway, and I'll catch up with you later in the week. But if you are live listening and you want to be involved in the show today, then tweet me at followthebounce. Unless you are on the WeChat listening live right now, then just get onto the Cliff Central account on WeChat. And message through whatever you've got. If you want to talk about Craig Joubert, I know many of you are Scottish persuasion do. If you want to chat about the Boks, you want to chat about the fact that New Zealand now look completely unstoppable, you want to chat about the fact that France have no idea, whatever you want to chat about today, most welcome to. Just bring it on. Speaking of the Scots, well, let's just start there, I suppose. It's a good place. That was the last match, and oh, what a heartbreaking result that was.
Look, the incident at the end, have you had a chance to look? Do you think it was a penalty? Do you think it should have been a penalty because it touched an Australian hand, and there's talk of accidental offside, maybe? And what was it you said to the referee as he was leaving the pitch?
I never got a chance, he was off that quick. Where I was, I think it was Phipps jumped, and it looked to, like it, to me, you know, I never had the perfect view, but it looked like to me it hit off Phipps and went back, and another player caught it. Obviously, Sousy was in and around there as well. It was a kind of loose ball, so I'm not sure if it's maybe you guys have looked it on the TV, but I've not had a chance. Certainly at the time, there was, I thought there was an Aussie arm, but I mean, you know, we're not the type of people to blame little things. And as I said, if we tightened up on other areas, we might not have been in that situation.
So true. There's a bit of class with these Irish. They're not going to crap on about it. But of course, it's a massively contentious issue, this. Was it a penalty? Should it have been given? And then on top of that, should it maybe even then been reviewed? Now, Craig Joubert is basically being made out to be the next Bryce Lawrence. There has been a huge backlash towards him at the moment. Gavin Hastings is saying what an absolute disgrace, a disgrace he is, and that he shouldn't be allowed to referee at the international match. Ex-English scrum off, and obviously he featured in the World Cup before, Matt Dawson said that he should be sent home right now and should not take any further part in the World Cup. Yeah, look, it's difficult in these high-pressure situations. A referee is always going to be a villain at some stage. Now, if you had to ask the Aussies what they thought about Craig Joubert, no problem whatsoever. You asked the All Blacks what they thought of Craig Joubert 4 years ago. Also pretty happy with him. But hey, there's the Scottish. They will find many, many things in that game where they're going to fall, you know, basically saying that Craig Joubert was found wanting, technically. The charge, the tap-down yellow card that Maitland got, they didn't think that was really agreeable. And then, of course, the penalty at the end. If it did touch Nick Phipps' hand, you know, it's a very technical thing here. We have the benefit, of course, of all these slow-mo replays and hindsight. We know exactly what we're looking for when you're looking at something. Craig Joubert is standing there, and he is applying everything to the way the law he sees it. Right or wrong. Let's just even say if he is wrong. The backlash shouldn't be as swift as this. It shouldn't be as harsh. Yes, there's so much riding on these games, but it wasn't a ridiculous call. I mean, it wasn't. There's been far worse. That Bryce Lawrence thing, for instance, that was just beyond bad. Anyway, look, the fact that he ran off the field at the end, they didn't exactly do him any favours, though, because that wasn't like an admission of guilt. But anyway, let's get away from Craig Joubert. Let's actually look at the results themselves. So we're going to start with that Australia versus Scotland game, seeing as we've taken out so much of the aftermatch drama. The Aussies, well, they were going into this one, and sure, definite favourites. They did have two major losses, and that Folau and Pocock weren't in the mix, but you'd always thought that they could lose three or four players and still be good enough to beat the Scottish side. This is a Scottish side that basically beat Japan by a heavy margin, but outside of that, they didn't really do much in the rest of the tournament. They obviously beat USA, but they were trailing them at halftime. They got hammered by the South Africans, and they left it very, very late and had a very, very hard-fought win against a Samoan team that did nothing in the tournament either. So they went into this game where everyone was projecting 20 points and more. Final result, 35 Australia, 34 Scotland. In fairness, the three tries that Scotland scored were relative gifts from Australia. The first try, nobody wanted to defend a ruck. Second try was, of course, a dodgy charge down from a very poor kick. And the third try, well, the rain came down and then suddenly there was a loose intercept out of nowhere. You wouldn't guess those tries could ever be scored against the Aussie team, what you've seen so far. So when it comes to 34, and Laidlaw said at the end there, if maybe they tighten up the area of other parts of the game, they wouldn't be in a position anyway. So Scotland, well done for being spirited. I know it sounds so patronising to call them brave and spirited, all that kind of stuff, but I don't think they were ever going to be good enough to make a semi-final. The fact they got so close actually probably makes it even more heartbreaking. So the Aussies are through. Chequered lives to breathe another day in this tournament. Going in reverse order from back from that, the Irish versus Argentina game. Now, that was also going to be fascinating. I called that one from last week saying Argentina have got so much momentum. They've built up such a head of steam in this tournament right now that they are going to be a formidable, formidable opponent to anyone who faces them. The whole thing about Ireland or France, they were playing to basically avoid New Zealand. Well, I didn't think either they're going to beat Argentina anyway. So Argentina started off so fast. They were 14-0, two tries up out of nowhere. Ireland did get back in the game, and it was so like very, very level in that second half. You almost thought that the Irish experience and the sort of calm heads would come through. But when you think Johnny Sexton wasn't on there, he didn't make the fitness in the end. Paul O'Connell on the bench, sorry, in the box, actually, the coaching box, because his hamstring's no longer part of his leg. They were missing too many good players. And the whole thing about this Argentinian team is they don't really care about holding back. They're playing rugby because they absolutely love it and they've got a passion for throwing the ball around and just being hard bastards. And look at them. They just kept scoring and scoring and scoring. They kept throwing that ball around. They could have easily just tried to kill the game, try to get the fly off into the pocket for a drop kick. But no, they threw the ball around, and before you know it, 43-20. Ireland are through to the semi-finals, just like in 2007. They were such a formidable side back then. In 2007, they lost to South Africa, who went on to win the World Cup back then. Now they've got Australia. Sure, I think it's too early to get into what's going to happen there. We need to know who's playing and how strong these teams are, because if Pocock and Folau still aren't back, which I think they will be, then I'm still going to go with Argentina to win that one. So Argentina could be finalists. Whoever would have thought that earlier this year? Okay, on to the other game working back. New Zealand-France. This was always going to be a one-sided match. How one-sided? Well, I don't think any of us could have predicted this. The French aren't great. There's no doubt about that. Their league has been infiltrated by loads of foreigners. All these big money clubs think they're doing everyone a favour. Sure, they're winning these tournaments, but are they doing anything for French rugby itself? Well, the team had no cohesion. They had no sort of heart, no sort of fight. And they went down 62-13. 9 tries, 3 of which came from Julien Servier, who looked like John Lomu at some stages, just bounding over those hapless French defenders. It was kind of predictable. You weren't too surprised, but at the same time, it was really, really sad. It just was sad to see France normally so good in these World Cups. They made the final last time around, of course. They have always given New Zealand a bit of a run for their money, beating them in crucial times as well. But that team on Saturday, well, where do they go from there? It's dire, really. Sure, SA now have New Zealand, and they're also thinking, wow, these guys are going to be incredibly hard to stop. But that's that French team. I mean, Namibia will basically remind you that the points margin when their match was less than that French team. So terrible. And then our game, SA versus Wales. We'll get into it in depth with Sean in about 10 minutes. But 23-19, it was good. Yes, it was good. That win was great. Freda Pierce scoring the try in the corner. Very, very cool. But there's always going to be a but, and I can't hold my tongue, unfortunately. That was not very encouraging by the Springboks going forward. I think they had about 60% possession. The Wales had to make almost 200 tackles. The Welsh had nothing with ball in hand. They had no efforts. Really, they were ever going to trouble us. They scored a try out of nowhere because Dan Bigger kicked the ball up and ran after it. That Welsh team was so spent, and we didn't really know how average this whole thing was going to be because of the previous games. But sure, South Africa should have been 15 to 20 points better on the day. And the fact that they're not doesn't give us much hope going to the semi-finals. Yes, I know it's a semi-final. Anything can happen. But if you want to win this tournament, which is your ultimate goal, especially when you're one of the big four nations, you've got to show something that could suggest that. The box are good. The box is strong. They're tough. But without, it's frustrating because you want to be happy. But there's not a lot of faith here to really have anything past the we won, let's move forward. Okay, try to say that without sounding too mean. I think I failed, but I can't win them all. Anyway, quick look at the messages. Quinton, who is a diehard Bok fan, he says, but to be frank, Ben, all we would have wanted Craig to rather have screwed the Aussies. Yeah, that's a good point. We would have preferred that if there was a refereeing call that was going to screw someone, it should have screwed the Aussies after they got after the 2011 World Cup. It's a fair point, but hey, only 15 Aussies go through. I think if the Scots went through, they would have been, Argentina would have slaughtered them. They really would have. At least the Aussies are in there. It's like a full rugby championship now, which I'm kind of happy with. Cindy from Ireland said the local Irish comedian said that I think they should be made to go and finish the World Cup in the Southern Hemisphere. No one around here gives a feck anymore. That's Irish for something far more rude. Cindy, it's a good point. I mean, obviously these things are going to be sold out, but it must be so demoralizing for these Northern Hemisphere guys to know that they haven't got a single team in the Final Four. One thing, having a full Southern Hemisphere final, you can almost kind of accept that. But not one in the semis? Well, that moves us into our big topic, our big first topic of the day, and that is, what is the Northern Hemisphere's problem? I know that sounds quite crass and quite rushed after just one weekend of poor results, but it hasn't just been one weekend of poor results, of course. There's so much more that is wrong with these guys. And there's been some very interesting articles on this. One which I read this morning was from The Telegraph. Now, that is much better than, what's the other one, that Daily Mail. That's basically a smut, useless publication where they just make lies and try to claim that our players are biting. Anyway, so they were saying, what's the point of trying to inspire players from the Northern Hemisphere and get them into these positions where you get big team talks and the nation must get behind you, yada, yada, yada. What is the point of all this if the players haven't got the skills to compete against Southern Hemisphere teams? It's a very, very valid call. Another one chiming in on this was Steve Hansen. He says that these owner-based clubs, which is obviously the teams that play in the Heineken Cup and obviously the English League, the French top 8 or top 12, whatever it's called, what is the point of all these foreigners that are coming in other than for just domestic success? It does nothing for the national teams. If you think about France is a prime example here, of course, because the All Blacks obviously just thrash France. They've got some really strong teams. They do really, really well. But what they're doing is they're just getting foreigners to come in, and they're getting these big, strong guys, and they're getting flowers they can kick points. They're not developing any skills whatsoever. They're not creating any combinations amongst French players. And it's kind of sad to see. I know the English teams are far more sort of patriotic as far as they do produce the local talent. But, you know, the competition levels, you've got to look back at that. How competitive are these leagues when they're doing well in their own terms and they think everything's fine, but then come up against Southern Hemisphere colossal strengths that we are, and then suddenly they find wanting, which kind of gives some perspective into Ruan Pina. He went to Ireland, everyone was saying how great he was, but no, he's not. And I think this whole Northern Hemisphere thing just reaffirms all that, and that's why he shouldn't be in the BOC team. But that's my one Ruan Pina thing for the show out of the way. Something that is very interesting about all of this is that the New Zealand model for rugby always comes into the spotlight when people want to, you know, talk about their success and also talk about their own failings. People would love to mimic what the New Zealanders do, but it is near impossible because I've got a great understanding about rugby. It's a rugby cultural thing. When I was there in 2011, a day didn't go by where I didn't walk past a park or some sort of open area where guys weren't playing touch rugby. I know it sounds like a cliched thing. It's like going to Brazil and seeing guys kick a ball around in the favela. But that's what they do there. They just love rugby because of what it is. It's about running with the ball. It's about free flow. It's about expression and using talents and skills and speed and guile, all these kind of things. And more and more reports are coming out that in schoolboy rugby, they play more for weight divisions rather than just having really strong big kids running over each other, kind of what happens here in SA. But then if your team is behind by 30 points going into half time, they actually swap the players around. Now, I didn't know this was true. I just thought that was one of those whimsical things they talk about in village rugby. But what a good idea, because you can't learn anything from a team getting drubbed by 60. And they're all kind of humble enough to understand this. Do you ever think that this could happen in other schools, other sporting structures around the world, especially here in South Africa? If your team, if you're watching and your son's in the team that's winning by 30, you want them to go and plow further, win by 100, whatever. Well, I'll just high five the other dads. Like, there's massive egos involved because parents always want to be winners. Everyone wants to be winners. But the great thing is they're missing out here is the big picture. Who's actually winning from one-sided contests? Anyway, not the New Zealanders. They see big picture, and that is why everyone absolutely salivates over how they play rugby, and they are just the desired article in the game itself. So that's what they're doing at junior levels. Now, to also talk about the Super Rugby and Rugby Championships and how great this is. I know here in the Southern Hemisphere, we kind of take it for granted because we feel there's too much rugby. It's constantly being rammed down our throats. But if you look at the cut and thrust, the pace, the competitive nature of Super Rugby, it's actually amazing. Just look at Argentina, right? Now, they're going to be joining Super Rugby as of this coming February in the new Super, I don't know how many, I think it's 18 teams. So they're going to be exposed to this throughout the year now, which means that if the money comes right, then they'll get all the players who are currently in the European leagues, they might filter back down into the Argentinian team to play Super Rugby. Now, we've already seen that since they've joined the Rugby Championships, here's a team that's, I know they were very good in 2007, and they were already where they are now in the semifinals. But you can just see there's different levels to their game now. The way they blew Ireland away, that wasn't just a kicking battle based on good defense. They blew the Irish away yesterday. It was an amazing performance. Now, if they're benefiting from the Southern Hemisphere way of rugby, which of course is just exposure to New Zealand, then can you imagine how jealous these Northern Hemisphere teams are watching this? They're about to watch the Rugby Championship for the next 2 weeks, whether they like it or not. Just in their home field. But it's got to be a huge plus, and it's something that us Africans we've got to think of how we can make more of it. We are playing New Zealand all the time. We're playing Australia all the time, obviously Argentina as well. But what are we really learning from it, other than the fact that they are really good? We've got to look past more than just rivalries. We've got to look more than just, we've got to try to beat these guys. We've got to look at how we can actually learn from each other. We're already in a position where I think just from sheer connection and contact, we are learning a lot. But just seeing how far behind these Northern Hemisphere teams are right now, skill-wise, we've got to capitalize on this. This divide is a divide that we can benefit from as South African rugby players. And I really think it's something we'll be conscious of and something that coaches should be more mindful of going forward. Yeah, so that's my two cents on the Northern Hemisphere problems. I don't think they're going to get any easier. Again, because what do? They play Six Nations. They're playing in those grubby fields. They know that if they can kick the ball around a bit, they'll win. Like, look at Ireland. They've won the Six Nations 2 years in a row, right? But how many tries have they scored in doing this? How many times have they really come from behind, unlocked defenses through dynamic running lines, offloads, slick handling, all that kind of stuff? They don't have to. All they need to do is just scrum really well, tackle their hard start, flood the breakdown, and kick your points. But that's not going to get you anywhere other than champions of Six Nations. As we've learned, means squat. As people have been saying on social media, if you win the Six Nations, that basically means you're the fifth best team in the world. Anyway, we're going to go to Sean Wilson now. But first, let's hear from Heinicke Meyer. We all know Heinicke Meyer. He's the guy that goes absolutely off his face when the Boks win. His celebrations the weekend were quite strange. Anyway, we're going to skip through him thanking the Lord. We're going to go straight to what he thinks of Frieda Prayer.
Been criticized because you stick to players injured or nearly at the end of their career. Tonight, in one pass, they send you to semi-final. What is your feeling?
I would like to kiss Fury, especially after that try. But, you know, I've always said coaching is overrated. You have to be able to pick guys of character. And I've always said character, players' nose is like charcoal. Whenever you put pressure on, you get diamonds. And knockout rugby is not, it's not about who plays the best rugby. It's just about character. And right at the end, you know, to score that try, showed some pace, my captain. You know, they say he doesn't have any more pace, especially the players, but I thought it was awesome. Especially at the halftime as well, you know, we kept composure. Fury was brilliant. And like I said, scored at the end. So I must give all those players respect. I thought, you know, a guy like Skalk came back from a very, very serious injury. People said it's an old player. He came through, and, you know, Dwayne and all the old players. But I also want to take my hat off to the youngsters. You know, Luit was brilliant. He got injured quite early on and played through with Eben and those three young centers. Wales were unbelievable in midfield, running hard with Jamie Roberts to keep them out. Defensively was awesome. But you have to back the right guys, and I'm so proud of them, and I will go to war with them.
Free, was there ever a moment that you doubted you could get over the line? Because the Welsh defence was superb all night. And did you ever feel like you couldn't break them down?
Yeah, it was a very tough game. During the game, it felt a lot similar to the 2011 game against them, and also the 2011 quarterfinal, which we lost by one penalty. So there was a stage where I felt it's pretty tough to break the line. Their rush defence put us under pressure, but I think around about 60 minutes, I could see there's a few of their guys were lying down. They were slowing the game down, and I just told the guys, look, they're probably off their feet at the moment. We've got a lot of gas left, so just keep on pushing, and then we'll pull it through, and hopefully, and luckily we did.
Very nice, very nice. Frieda Prayer, soft-spoken captain. So I'm saying he's not inspiring the team as much. But hey, Heinicke Meyer, hey, smart call, man. Yes, sis. If the lighting was any lower in that press conference, I think the music was any more sultry, the things could have happened. Sean, did you watch that game, and did you have fingernails left?
Yes and no.
Yes.
In that order, to those questions. I was completely on edge that game. I'm never good with good World Cup games. It always humbles me to think how useless I would be if I would actually play in them, to be honest. But didn't you find the one thing interesting about all the quarterfinals is that the one game that actually looked like a knockout game was our one. And so the other ones didn't resemble them at all, did they?
Not the slightest. No, not at all. It looked like a opening pool match, which Australia got wrong against Scotland.
Yeah.
It looked like a pre-season international where France rocked up with half the team hungover against New Zealand. And then it looked like Argentina were on tour to Ireland, and Ireland just thought they had it won. Yeah, it was a very interesting mixture of four matches. Obviously, we're going to focus now on the Springbok one, of which people have been saying. And again, you know, if you ever want to find the voice of the Springbok match, you see what Nick Mallett had to say. And Nick Mallett had to say the following. He said that we should be grateful. We must not be negative, because if we were offered a semi-final after losing to Japan, we should take it. Now, as I said at the start of the show, that Japan result right now means absolutely nothing to me. We've got to look at the present. We've got to look at the now. So taking Nick's sage advice away, I'm not particularly happy, because yes, it's great to have a semi-final. It is great to be top four. But nothing on Saturday suggested that we are even going to come within 12 against the All Blacks. Is that a bit harsh, or do you reckon I'm on the money there?
I think you're pretty much on the money. Look, I think the Nick Mallett sentiment of just be grateful that we're through, I believe that is the kind of behavior everyone must feel on the Saturday itself, and probably the Sunday itself, you know, just to look through. It's just a way of kind of glorifying that good old, the week is a long time in rugby, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, just to, but you know, celebrate. But you're in the semi-final, be in the now, look at it, you know. But on the Monday, now we got to go, okay, how are we going to beat the All Blacks? And how does history, and how does history suggest what kind of position we're in to do so on Saturday, you know? So I think, I think you're right in terms of we mustn't, look, we went into this World Cup thinking a loss against Japan was completely off the table. So I think to put it on the table retrospectively because we lost to them is missing the point a wee bit, I would say. And yeah, so we're in the semis, but we've got to look at some Springbok imperfections to figure out how we're going to win on Saturday, from my point of view.
Yeah, look, Rothman on Twitter just reminded me that all this talk about Springbok character and all that kind of stuff, yeah, it's all lovely. But, you know, getting back to the point about Northern Hemisphere teams, you can inspire them as much as you want, but if they haven't got the skills, what's the point? All these Northern Hemisphere digs that are happening right now, I can't help but feel that they sound like Bok digs, because it's a similar kind of thing. You know, we haven't quite got that skill set that's going to be like what we saw against Argentina or New Zealand over the weekend. So when you think there's all this talk of character and all these other things, it's, I don't think we, again, we're missing the real big point here, is that, sure, I think there's always enough player quality in this Bok team to run over a trampled Wales. I don't know. I don't have any positivity right now. But the big question I'm getting out of all this, without droning on like I've really had a bad day, is that, is this enough now to justify Heineke Meyer getting another 4 years as coach? Or will he be judged on if he wins this game on the weekend?
Well, this is a million-dollar question, isn't it? Is what is the actual parameter here for Heineke Meyer, what they're going to deem as successful or not, when you look at the four-year tenure as a whole, obviously with the World Cup being probably the most important of that, or the most important element of that tenure. So what would the line be? I mean, there was so much talk before the tournament that Heineke Meyer has been, like another four-year extension to this contract has been put on the table but not signed yet. My guess would be it's just sitting at the top of Oregon Hoskins' draw, and it's dependent on this World Cup. Mm. But that would be what I would decide, that would be the explanation for me. So what would have been deemed acceptable when they made that four-year deal? It could well have been the semi-finals. But I think that might have been part of the reason why Heineke was quite so relieved, is I think that quarterfinal win could well have actually bought him four more years.
Exactly. Exactly. It was such a pivotal reaction that to me as well. When I watched that, like, ah, oh, that's cool, look at him. He's celebrating like the rest of us drunks. But I almost think that there was a bigger meaning behind that celebration. It's like, here's a guy who knows he's not in a good place right now. Here's a guy who knows he hasn't achieved much. But because they won that match, this could be it. That's his next 4 years right there. Because Dwayne Vermeulen has the skills to throw the ball around his back and Freda Priet followed, that has given Heineke Meyer job security for four more years. And that's what's really, really bugging me right now.
I think we debate all the time 4 years how much stress that we must put on World Cup and World Cup pivotal moments like that as well. You know, I mean, so many... There's been so many examples down the years of different things that would have reacted with coaches. You know, there was a last-minute penalty in 99 with Yanni De Beer. How would we have viewed Nick Mallett retrospectively had we lost that game against... had we lost that game in 80 minutes against Australia as opposed to Yanni? There's even talks of 1995, how the talks of the tactics that Kitch Christie wanted to employ in the final was overruled by the players. Can you imagine what kind of history that would have done as a coach, you know? So I understand that so much hinges on small moments, but I think in this World Cup, as tough as it was and the great character shown against Wales, I think we'd have to accept that at any point, anything less than a Springbok win in a quarterfinal against Wales puts the coach under pressure. I think that should really be the standard that we set. So if you look at the last 18 months of Heineken Man, shall we say, it's been ever since that he actually beat the All Blacks in his past, which I think we put far a little too much stress on this respectively, is that it's actually been a really, it's hovered between disastrous and acceptable, with the acceptable possibly be speaking a little bit harshly. But, I mean, the loss at home to Argentina, the loss to Japan, go back to the end of the year tour, the loss to Wales, the thrashing that was given by Ireland. So you wonder where in the last half of his tenure has he really, really shown the highlights of Springbok rugby. And I can't really come up with names, could you?
I'm sure I really can't. I think that the team showed great character to win in Argentina this year, but no, I can't see too much. Yeah, they're pretty handy, the Northern Hemisphere tours, but I don't think that can be really drawn much into considering these guys are of basic skill set. I think what it really comes back to for me is that 4 years in, he still hasn't got a hope in hell of beating the All Blacks when it really matters. We haven't got anything other than the fact that we can try to play a low percentage game, hope for everything that the All Blacks have an off game, and that our kicker, whoever it may be, will not miss a shot at goal. And that for me is not what you give another 4 years to. That for me is, okay, we tried, but yeah, 4 years, injuries, no injuries, that's just not what we need. And that's not what we need going forward. But let's just move away from Heineken now, because I think, I know I have a propensity to dwell too much on him. Looking at the low risk kind of style, which is the only thing we can play against the All Blacks, because if we try and match them with skills, they'll just outrun us very quickly. We've basically got to go and they're quite guarded. Do you see any changes to the team with this game plan in mind?
I mean, if that is the game plan in mind, I don't see many changes to the team. I mean, to be honest, Heineken is very low to make team changes anyway, apart from there was a disaster. I thought it was the right call to pick Francois Herber instead of Yanni Dupessis on the weekend. We'll just swap their roles, should I say. We shouldn't say drop, we should say different role for Yanni Dupessis because he takes it seriously in the World Cup. But it was a very rare move for Heineken Meyer to make in his tenure, I would think. So I think we're going to be looking at the same personnel. The problem I'm having, then, is that when we, in our classic challenges at Ellis Park, I mean, the games that we came up with that once beat the All Blacks and another time came pretty close is very, very different to what you're pitching for the World Cup knockouts now. And I know that everyone kind of gets carried away thinking that World Cup knockouts are a different animal in their type and strength, etc. I can tell you right now, from my point of view, regardless of the weather, I personally can't see that game resembling something like 15-12 on Saturday against that All Black side, no matter what we're playing.
No.
And the other part of it, as you said, if we go in there with the tactics that seem to have been developed in this World Cup, I can't see us beating the All Blacks. And that's just sad, honest truth of it. If we would go more towards giving us a shot at Ellis Park and try to bring it over to Twickenham, I think we have a much better shot. I'm not saying we win it, but I think there is a much better possibility. But so you wonder if there maybe has been a bit more of a slight horses for courses approach since the Japan game, the team might have ensued with the idea to go back to what we were trying that was showing a certain amount of success/improvement against the All Blacks. But to be honest, we must have seemed to doubt it, don't we?
Sure do, Sean. Sure do. Look, I think the forward pack pretty much speaks for itself here. Frans Malherbe, He wasn't incredible over the weekend. Some say, you know, he was as good as Yanni, just maybe a little bit more disciplined. But I still think he definitely deserves his spot. The big question, I think, going forward this weekend is if Heineken Meyer wants to bring Victor Matfield back. Obviously, there's a big doubt now. Lotiaga, foot injury. Bismarck Duplessis, hand injury. Okay, so look, when we're losing Bismarck, we've already seen it. Adrian Strauss, again, it's like a relatively like for like. You know, you might not have as much presence as Bismarck with the breakdowns and that kind of stuff, but you wouldn't be like, Adrian Strauss is starting, oh shit, no, that's not good, we can't have that. So that's not a big issue. But now if Lotiaga is out, that means obviously Peter Seftetoye is really kind of thrust into the big time here. If Victor Matfield is fit, he's going to play, there's no doubt about that, for two reasons. Heineken wants him there, and secondly, I think Heineken would be loath to kind of thrust Peter Steptoe into this sort of cauldron, which is the All Blacks in the semi-final. But let's go into the backs quickly, and let's talk about fly half. Now, Andre Pollard, first half, brilliant. 4 out of 4, not the easiest of kicks, nailed them. Got to the second half, missed 3. I know at that stage, it's tough to always say, oh yeah, we could have beaten them by eight if Pollard kicked his, you know, kick better.
Please don't fall into that trap.
Yeah, we spoke about this. It's annoying because it's got to do with real play and stuff. But now, is there a school of thought to say, right, we've got most of our games sewn up now. Forwards are doing well. Backs are going to be all right. Is it now we're going to bring in someone who have got more faith in the kicking? And if that is true, who is that going to be?
It's a very good question, isn't it? It was just another great cliche on the real game of two halves for Andre Pollard in terms of his kicking. I mean, I thought he started fantastically. And Andre Pollard's kicking action has always made me surprised that his kicking percentage isn't higher, to be honest. He looks like a natural kicker, but it was failing him a bit in the second half. The question is, if we're going to play a kick-orientated game, personally, it's Lyles. If it's going to be defense-orientated and kicking that much, I think there's a massive argument to say Mornay Sane should be starting that game. You know, is it what I would do? No, it wouldn't be, because, like I was suggesting earlier, not a game that I would think is going to beat the All Blacks on Saturday. There's probably a better argument that says you should play Mornay Sane against Wales than against the All Blacks, from my point of view. So, I'm not sure it'll be bored. It comes back down to, so if Mornay Sane was about the equation, it would come back down to the Landy issue, which, of course, in the battle between Pollard and Landy, Landy always seems to draw the short straw for the last 2 years in terms of...
He does indeed.
...proving himself. So I would have gone into this World Cup thinking, let's ignore how Heineken America could have diversified for a second, but you would have gone into this World Cup, there's been niggling thought behind everyone's mind that this might be one World Cup too early for Andre Pollard.
Mm.
And it was possibly proved on Saturday that it might be. But Landy probably offers the more balanced set of what you're suggesting the areas we look for. And I think it should be very seriously considered if I was in Heineken's shoes.
Yeah, look, it will be considered, but my theory on Pollard, and I'm not just saying this because I do believe in him, is that I think it's much tougher to offload the tackle when you're being tackled by Pollard than you are being tackled by any other fly-off option in the Bok team, and that has to be considered because that 10-12 channel, I mean, this is where New Zealand are scoring some pretty amazing tries. I don't think his kicking is that much worse than Lambie on a good day or, in fact, Mornay Sane. So I think that needs to be put to bed. But Sean, before I let you go, we've got to get one more selection consideration out of the way. Are you going to go with Jesse Creel, seeing as defensive frailty still become a buzzword with him, and then do you bring in Jan Serfontein?
The problem I have with the Jan Serfontein issue now is I can't. That would be yet another centre combination that the Springboks have used in this tenure. And to give it a first outing in the semi-final against the All Blacks, that just kind of makes me shudder, to be honest. So I would stick with the Creel Delendi partnership just because something has built there and you hope that the guy's fine and able to withstand what's going to be an assault on Saturday with this place. I would look possibly towards the other major selection concern that hasn't come up would be one of Billy LaRue, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought he was disastrous on Saturday. Like I said, for reasons similar to earlier, if you would start playing Kirsten in that position, again, I can't see the game where South Africa actually beats the All Blacks on Saturday with playing Kirsten doing it. I don't think there'll be enough decision makers in the back line.
Yeah.
It would look like, if we stick with Pollard as well, it would look like Frieda Priya would be the only guy 9-15 that's putting anyone into space. And I can't see how we beat the All Blacks with Kirsten there. My argument might even lean towards putting Landy there, which wouldn't be ideal because the man's hardly spent any time at fullback for the Springboks, but that would be the other consideration I would have. And look at these positions that we're pitching about. I mean, they're pretty much through the spine of the team decision makers that are going on. With Grant Vermeer and Frieda Priya are probably the only constants out there, but there would be... We're looking at the selection debates are one which would change the way the Springboks play quite dramatically from what happened on Saturday, or certainly the flow of the game. So it's a very interesting week coming up. And as nervy as we are, I think we must just also remember, it sounds a bit negative, I just want to end it a little bit positive if we can say. This is just epic to play the All Blacks in a World Cup semi-final. And I would say this is definitely the biggest game that what we would say the greatest rivalry in rugby has played for 20 years.
Since the easily. Game.
So I think there was a little bit of that. And I think the Springboks will in a weird way relax a little bit because I think they were put themselves more under pressure against Wales. And there was a sense of but because you're more scared about how crucified you'll get back home if you lose to Wales. But there might be a sense of a little bit more, you know, the stakes almost lower if you get knocked out by the All Blacks in the semi-finals. I'm sure they'll go into it positively. But the worst case scenario is a lot, lot better than it's been if they lost on Saturday.
Sean, I've seen the headline already. Box relish underdog card status.
Oh, that's going to be played a lot.
I mean, just hearing you there, I can hear the guy typing it now in the background. Yeah, look, I think you made some very, very valid points there, Sean. Something we'll all be able to harp on for the rest of the week is that, yeah, now we've got the underdog tag, and the Box know that they haven't got the game for this win, but they'll just do what they do. They'll play to their own with inner strengths and then hope that the All Blacks cock it up. I think that's kind of the most succinct way of putting it, to be fair, really. Sean, so catch more of Sean. Sean, we've got the prediction guys coming up next. So if more of Sean's insights, which are always daily on tap and golden, at simply Sean, that's S-E-A-N, with an underscore at the end. Sean watches all the games. Of course, he kind of will know more than you and me put together. So get him on Twitter. Sean, anything else you want to say before we let you go?
I'm all cleared up. Like I said, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier with the theme of how Nick Mallett would just be relieved how we're there on the Saturday, with how we switch the focus on the Monday, on how we actually view how we're going to play the All Blacks. And I think every single fan should have that kind of balance this week. We'll be as excited. This should be the most excited that we've ever, like, this should be like a top three, four rugby game experiences we've ever had as a rugby fan. Be incredibly excited about Saturday. But think about the kind of game that's going to beat the All Blacks, and whether you can really imagine it happening with the team that gets there. And I think certain trends that have happened in this World Cup might suggest I'm not sure the game plan's going to happen to beat the All Blacks. And yeah, hopefully that's proven wrong.
Okay, Sean, I was literally just looking for a go province from you, but I mean that too. I mean, I really take I appreciate that.
Oh, we should go on. I'll give you the rugby highlight of the weekend, Western Province.
Exactly. Western Province versus Lions this weekend. We'll get into more of that later in the week, though. Sean, thanks so much. We're going to come back with Johan from Principa D, these prediction guru phenon geniuses. But first, damn it. I always hate it when I press a button, I think I'm doing the right thing.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy.
We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Yeah, you know, I strive to sound professional here. I really do. It wasn't for Duncan, who knows where the show would be. Who knows? Anyway, we've got Johan on the line. Johan, can you hear us?
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, cool. Right, Johan. So we are going to, for those who haven't been on Twitter, haven't been on, I don't know how you consume your rugby normally, but if you're listening to this, there's a very good chance that you're savvy enough to know exactly what I'm talking about. So I'll keep the intro light. Johan is one of the clever guys behind what's been like the most effective World Cup preview engine. Now, we've had Paul the Octopus in the past for the Football World Cup, of course. And then after that, people were just taking the piss with all kinds of other mythical animals, and they weren't really on the money. But Johan's system works. Johan, just a quick snapshot. What's your success rate been for the World Cup so far?
We've gotten 91% of the games right. I think we only got four wrong across through the whole World Cup.
Okay. Let me just try to guess the four wrong. Okay. Georgia versus Tonga.
Yeah.
The Japan SA.
Yes.
Recently, the Argentina Island game.
Yes.
And the other one I'm going to guess was... crap.
Japan.
What? Japan who?
The second Japan game. So they lost the Japan game. I think, what was the last game again?
The last game was against USA.
Yeah, so that one as well. We got that one wrong as well.
You guys thought USA would win that?
Yes, we thought so, yeah. So, that, yeah, those were the four. That was an interesting one. It was a close game. I can't recall the exact margin we said, but we said it was going to be a really close game.
I think it was 10 points in the end, Johan. You really let yourself down there. Okay, so so now we've just had the quarterfinals. So those are four really big games. We're now into two really big games. So what's the procedure that you guys go through to formulate your predictions going into this week? Because everyone has a system, right? Either it's listening to Sean and I rabbit on about Box having no chance, or it's looking at the stats and the various stats app. What's the whole process that you guys go through?
Yeah, so what we try to do is we try to emulate what the general Super Brew predictor kind of does. So he says, right, let's look at past performance, so these two teams against one another. Let's look at the recent performance, so how's the team doing at the moment, so the current sentiment and view and form of the team, and then where they're playing, what they're doing in the World Cup thus far. So in terms of what we do, we say, let's look at the past performance of all of the teams going back even to 1995, so 20 years of data. Yeah. We try to take out the individual team's performance. We say, what are the characteristics of the team that is currently playing? So where are they ranked? What is the odds of the game? How many tries have they scored in the past few games? Are they getting better? Are they getting worse? We try to bring all of that in. And then the one thing we've thought about closely and actually struggled a little bit with, and I think that came through in the Ireland game on Sunday, is how do we get the machine to be sensitive to what's happening around the team? So, for example, Ireland lost three really key players this weekend or in the last week, and unfortunately, the machine wasn't sensitive enough to pick that up.
I was going to ask you the exact same thing. It's like Johnny Sexton. There was talk all week about he's going to be in. Come game day. He's in a tracksuit.
That's very tough. And I think what we try to do and how we try to bring that in is using Fantasy League data. So there's a fantasy website where people buy players for their team, and as more people want to buy certain players, the value of the team of that member goes up. And then we said, all right, this might be a good proxy for saying, all right, if your top strongest 15 players are playing, the overall value of this team should be quite high. Right. But unfortunately, I think in the last week, the Fantasy League wasn't sensitive enough to Ireland losing all of those players. So we missed out a little bit on that one.
Okay. Now, is it purely just a machine, or have you got interns and a team of other people who are just constantly typing in codes and sums and things like that? Like, how mechanical is this process?
So in terms of the modeling, so that's completely automated. So the model takes in the information and it spits out what it thinks the final outcome is going to be. What makes it a bit tricky is gathering all of the data we use. So we literally need to sit and pull in the odds information, pull in the recent history, the results. And what makes it interesting is it's kind of an iterative process. So through the whole World Cup, after every single game, we retrain the model. So then the model adjusts its expectations. So, for example, if historically we knew that a team that's ranked much higher than a team that's a little bit lower would translate into an average difference of 10 to 15 points, all of a sudden in the World Cup, we see that difference comes down a little bit. We'd hope that the machine then picks up on that and adjusts as the World Cup carries on.
Okay, cool. Well, Johan, thanks so much for giving us the insights around this, because people have always been asking me, it's like, how do they come up with that kind of stuff? You know, they get it right. And unfortunately, in some circles, I'm the only person that knows sport, Cliff Central being one of them. So I get asked a lot of questions.
Yep.
So it's good that I can at least sort of deflect them a bit here. Going for the rest of the week, where can the guys out there find all your information, infographics, all that kind of stuff?
Sorry, can you repeat the question? The line is a bit bad there.
Yeah, so in order to get all the insights we've just spoken about, where are people going to go for all of this? And sorry, where and when? Because people are very, very edgy about where they get this. They want to be first.
So the data we get as close to the game as possible, and we pull it from the internet. So we pull it from the World Cup website, from odds, bookie data, bookie sites, and then we just manually process it and it automatically then updates the model. But if people are really interested in the infographics and where all that data comes from, they can look at our website. It's www.principa.co.za, and all of the stats and results for the infographics is on there as well.
Cool. So Principa. PRINCIPA.
Yes.
.co.za. And then on Twitter, you guys are Principa D.
Principa D, yeah. @PrincipaD.
Cool, Johan. Thanks so much. I think we'll chat again on Friday because we need to We need to go head to head again on the semifinals. Two interesting games. I would say one predictable, one very much. Let's just wait and see the team sheets. So I'll catch you. I'll catch you back on the Gareth Cliff Show in the morning on Friday then.
Cool. Thanks, Ben. And well done for getting all of your predictions right this week. And I think you showed that having that very sensitivity to what's going on around the team helps a lot.
Thanks. I think the Irish depth was their Achilles heel this tournament. And yes, it has. It's come home to roost for them. Cool, Johan. Thanks so much. We'll chat again on Friday.
Cool. Thanks, Ben. Thanks for your time.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. So that's Johan from Principe D. So if on Twitter, just join them there at Principe D. They have these really great infographics. So not only are they giving you the predictions of what's what, but you're also getting some really cool insights of like the history of the teams, who's done what, points, average points when these teams meet, historical results, and of course always back down to like, you know, who scores the most tries, who's looking like an attacking threat, because it's nice to have all this information going into the match, because even if it's a boring match, going in there understanding certain things makes it exciting. So just a quick look at the messages. We haven't got too much time left, so I'll just get to Boko here. He says, I reckon the Boks have a 0.0 chance of beating the All Blacks. I don't think they have an answer for Sonny Bill Williams, the most amazing alpha athlete. Bromance there. Coming off the bench, he's going to destroy our backline. Duboko, I agree with 97% of your message there. I don't think Sonny Bill's going to destroy us, but this is the strange thing about these All Blacks, right? Going back to that rugby culture, that, what's his name? Someone Moody. He's just a sub prop that came on. How's the handling on that guy? Look how that guy linked with the backs and then suddenly tries happened. Every single one of those players knows exactly what to do with ball in hand. If it's something loose, they don't just pick it up and bring it to someone. They pick it up and there's like that split second awareness. You know what it made like Zinedine Zidane so good in football all those years back? The guy always had vision and time. And it's like the All Blacks are blessed with that from positions 1 all the way through to 15. So before we get the leadership platform in here, let's have a quick look at the semis. Those have been decided now. First semi-final, Saturday at 5 o'clock. Friday will be just kind of mulling over all the stats. Saturday, 5 o'clock, New Zealand versus South Africa. What we're looking for here is we've got the overwhelming favourites, the New Zealanders. The SA team will absolutely love the underdog status. You heard it here first. You'll now read it on many, many sites. That'll be your headline. So SA, well, we've gone through with Sean. There's no real chance there, but SA are going to play a conservative match, hope for the absolute best, and just hope a couple of calls go their way so they can kick the crap out of New Zealand. I don't see it being a pretty match. Well, if you like New Zealand rugby, it could be pretty if they get ahead. So I'm going to go with New Zealand winning that one by 15 points. Of course, this is my sort of basic assumption on these things. We still need to see team sheets, because if injuries happen, as we saw in the Irish game, suddenly a team becomes a lot weaker. The final semi will be Australia versus Argentina. Wow, what a match we have been blessed with here. Hanneke Meyer talks about being blessed. Well, I'm going to talk about it in a more universal sense, because we've got a team that's going to run the ball with so much spirit and passion and pace. These Argies have been wonderful. I really do love watching these guys. They're very much my second team. If you're into that second team kind of thing, you understand what I'm talking about. Australia, on the other hand, well, we saw what the Japan lost did to South Africa. It galvanized them. It finally gave them a clue. Is the same going to happen now for Australia? Is this going to be that little brief wake-up and sort of shock that they needed in order to kind of get them to playing their best? Well, it all depends if Pocock's going to be back. I think if they can have their first choice loose trio, even though McCallum was really, really good on the weekend at number 8, I think if they can get Pocock and Hooper bossing this match, it'll almost neutralize the RGs, because they've got such a great forward pack. And then backline-wise, well, I can't see Foley having the same bad day with the boot he had against Scotland. You've got to look at that team and think that they've probably got enough. They've got solidity. But if it comes down to 50-50 and a coin toss, well, I'm going Argentina all the way. Again, depends on the team that they pick and how much strength they can take from this semi-final. Because it also happens with these teams that sometimes they just don't have enough stamina to go from really big wins to create more big wins. I mean, look at Ireland itself. They beat France when they were really like backed against the wall, their player-wise, but they couldn't do it again for 2 weeks running. So much gets taken out of you with these massive euphoric wins. Look at Japan, they beat SA, and they got pumped by Scotland the very next week. So there's so many different factors to look into. We'll have a lot more about this going through the week. So if you join me on the Gareth Cliff Show right here on Cliff Central, weekday mornings. Sorry, weekday mornings. That sounds better. From 6 until 9, around 6:30 SA time, I always review all the latest things that are happening in sport. But if that's too early for you, or you live elsewhere in the world and your time zone isn't conducive for this, cliffcentral.com under Ben Sport. That's pretty much all that I have time for right now. Leadership Platform is up next. Thank you so much for joining me in the latest edition of Rugby Central. Thanks so much to my guest, Sean Wilson. And, of course, Johan from Principa D, the guys who are predicting the matches. And are doing a pretty good job of it. We'll catch you back next Monday, hopefully with talk of a SA-Australia or SA-Argentina final. But let's not hold our breath too much on that. Let's just enjoy the spectacle, because this is going to be one of the greatest games we're going to see forever and ever. The biggest New Zealand SA confrontation for, last 20 years.
This is CliffCentral.com.